And so I was told after about 18 months being at that company that they were open to flexible working requests and that I should put one in. So I did. About 10 days later, they put a settlement package in front of me, told me I was underperforming and to leave immediately. There are loads of different ways of doing it, but the in-person contact I do think is incredibly important because remote and in-person work are complementary, they're not opposing. And I think there's a really interesting trend at the moment of the CEOs of large corporates blaming flexible working for their problems because it buys them time.
From the first-time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTN podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shakers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I'm your host, Jane Wakefield, and joining me this week is Molly Johnson-Jones, the co-founder of Flexa, a startup aimed at helping people find flexible work. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you very much for having me. Lovely to be here.
Now, this is such a fascinating subject, and it feels as if it's something that everybody's talking about at the moment. So let's start by you explaining to me what it is that Flexa did, and also a bit about your own backstory around why this became important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it probably makes the most sense to start with why on earth we started a startup and why we decided to build Flexa. So it kind of actually all started in 2017 without us really realising that that was happening. But yeah, that was where the origin story was, because I'd been working in investment banking, which is not notoriously flexible, for about 18 months after university. And during that time, I realised I had quite a severe autoimmune disease that was stopping me from walking sometimes. Like, my feet would swell up, my face would swell up, my hands would swell up. Very, very uncomfortable to get into an office. I could still work, but being in an office 5-6 days a week, working anywhere between 12 and 16 hour days, just wasn't really conducive to me being able to manage it at all. And so I was told after about 18 months being at that company that they were open to flexible working requests and that I should put one in. So I did. And about 10 days later, they put a settlement package in front of me, told me I was underperforming and to leave immediately. At that time, I was about 23. So I didn't really know that this kind of discrimination happened all the time. Spoke to a lawyer. They said the settlement package was pretty fair and to take it and try to find an employer that wouldn't do that again. So, you know, I left thinking, well, they definitely weren't open to flexible working, and started my job hunt. It was impossible to find out which companies would offer one day a week from home. I remember really desperately trying to ask recruiters about it. Immediately, I was a red flag. I told a few people about my autoimmune disease, immediately dropped from the process. It was like I was damaged goods after that. And I became incredibly frustrated with it, and also met hundreds of other people, predominantly women and people with disabilities, that were having exactly the same experience. At the time that, you know, this was all happening, I'd met my now husband, who was working at a really flexible company, but he wanted to leave after being there for about 5 years and went into exactly the same process that I'd been in for about 3 years, trying to find true flexibility. And he was like, surely this can be fixed. And so we came up with the idea of Flexa, which was effectively to bring transparency to the job hunting process, verify company working environments as to actually what they are, and showcase companies that are offering 1, 2, 3, 4 fully days at home a week, fully remote, dog-friendly offices, flexible hours, whatever it might be. And we launched 3 weeks before the pandemic hit, so it's a very different world.
It certainly is. I mean, now we're all talking about that, aren't we? We're all talking about the need for flexibility. So what kind of customers do you have? So you offer people transparency as to what companies are doing, but who are you seeing kind of using this, and you know, how many people have you sort of placed in employment?
So we work with companies from massive enterprises like Microsoft, BT, Mars, all the way through to startups that are also offering flexibility. From a kind of business model perspective, like, we don't necessarily place people. We're much more of an employer brand platform, a bit like Glassdoor it would be. But now we've risen to over 2.5 million users. We're growing by over 150,000 users every month and onboarding some household names, which is probably the most exciting thing that could be happening for us. I think, you know, when I talk about what our success metrics are, and people are like, oh, but isn't it, you know, people that get jobs? For us, we've seen that hiring can be done quite differently. For a very long time, it's been, you know, moved from being on, you know, a little ads in the newspapers before the internet really existed. Then those ads moved on to the likes of Indeed, LinkedIn. It's very reactive. So, you know, a company wants to hire for a role and then they're like, oh, I have to start all over again, get all of that interest. And it's a very reactive and inefficient process. Whereas we thought turning hiring into marketing, marketing companies as brilliant, flexible places to work, gaining them reputations as places that are going to, you know, treat their employees very well was ultimately the best way to then build those employer brands and constantly have a pipeline of people that want to work for you. And we tested that hypothesis with ourselves and it worked amazingly. Like, we've never spent one penny on hiring. You know, we've never put out a job advert. We've never used a recruiter. We don't have a people or talent team at all. And we've hired over 20 different roles through our own employer branding and being known as a genuinely great place and flexible place to work.
And I see that you recently did a report, which I was looking through, and it, you know, it had some really interesting findings. It was really kind of highlighting some of the UK's most flexible firms. And I just wanted to drill down to some of the things that you found out. So you've got this kind of dichotomy, I suppose, haven't you, between people that want to be fully remote and those who are saying you've got to be in the office 5 days a week. And it feels as if that divide is also between small, younger startup companies and big corporates. So we're seeing big corporates kind of feeling very uneasy with the idea of people not being in the office, whereas startups are kind of much more able to embrace it. Is that a fair comment?
I think it's much easier for smaller organisations to embrace flexibility, particularly the totally, you know, distributed, disaggregated teams. But then you look at some counterexamples of companies that have done that incredibly well. MongoDB, obviously Atlassian, all over the kind of future of work news about it. Like, it's perfectly possible. It's just much more intentional. And I think one of the biggest barriers to a lot of large corporates embracing flexibility is it does mean massive organizational transformation, because you have to have brilliant systems, brilliant comms, great managers in place to be able to do that. So I think there's a lot of overhaul that has to happen, but ultimately that is the future. You know, I posted this morning about Nike CEO and him blaming flexible working for his lack of innovation. And I think there's a really interesting trend at the moment of the CEOs of large corporates blaming flexible working for their problems because it buys them time. Whereas actually, if you look back at Nike's historic performance, you know, while they were in the office, Lululemon stole their market share for quite a while. Under Armour did exactly that too. You have Salomon coming in a while back, Patagonia, for example. All of those companies are flexible. Yet Nike is blaming flexibility now. And, you know, the current big threat is Deckers Brands, who own Hoka, who have become now the most desirable running shoe. They're stealing Nike's market share. And obviously that CEO is now under a massive amount of pressure. So we're seeing a lot of large corporates where they have public shareholders, you know, very, very public performance annual reports, like, they are blaming flexible working to buy them time because it takes months to prove or disprove that, right? So they're going to start changing everything and try and get their market share and their stock price growth back. So I think we're in a really divisive time where there's a lot of rhetoric around flexible working being bad and it's a scourge on society because everyone's too lonely, or, you know, they're avoiding work, they're working four jobs, whatever it might be, whereas a lot of it's scaremongering, I think. And I'm hoping that maybe in 3 years, we'll get to the point where we're having rational, logical discussions backed by evidence around the fact that there are better models than going into the office 5 days a week.
So one of the companies that you highlight in the report, Locum's Nest, is doing quite a radical thing and allowing their staff to set their own working hours. That feels quite brave. What's the advantage of that, do you think? And has it worked out, basically, for companies that have tried it, in your experience?
I think, again, it really depends on how companies are set up to operate. I think, you know, another FlexFi company, Deel, they are hugely distributed and they have asynchronous hours where ultimately, like, if you're working across multiple time zones, the actual time period that an individual is working is much less important. Same with Atlassian, right? And I think that's one of the big benefits is if you have a team placed across 10 time zones, as long as you're focused on output, and that is what people's performance is being measured on, and managers are trained to set smart targets, KPIs, whatever it might be, and you can actually track when somebody is performing or underperforming rather than using the lazy proxy of presenteeism, then I think it can definitely work. But I do think that there's a lot of adaptation depending on the company. Like we at Flexa set core hours of 11 till 3 where everybody is online, because it helps for us to be able to all collaborate together for that set period, and then otherwise people set their hours outside of that. So I think it's up to the company in terms of the type of work that they're doing. But one thing that I would say is that having some flexibility in hours is an absolutely game-changing way to be able to increase diversity, particularly gender diversity in your company, because of obviously women still shoulder the burden of childcare and household chores, and being able to flex your work around that is a huge thing when people are now, I mean, 55% of people are looking for flexible hours, and the majority of those people are women.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. You mentioned that, you know, we're kind of almost in a time of experimentation at the moment, aren't we? People trying out lots of different things. There was a lot of talk a while ago about the sort of 4-day week. I was speaking to somebody the other day that was a big proponent of the 4-hour day, which I think there's a lot of sense in as well, because, you know, we're not very good at concentrating for 8 hours a day, I think. And that sort of does feel now rather a long working day. Do you think we are going to see those sort of things increasingly built into how we work in the same way that, you know, the weekend was introduced at some point during our history?
Yeah, I think there's loads of really exciting innovation and evolution that's happening at the moment. I'm not sure I'd be sure about the 4-hour day. I definitely couldn't get enough done in 4 hours. But things like the 4-day week, we operate 4.5-day week. Loads of our clients operate a 9-day fortnight if they're not quite comfortable with the 4-day week yet. And we've also got clients on people on Flexa with 4-day weeks. I think the evolved work week's a really exciting one, just because I totally agree with the notion that ultimately, as you said, the 2-day weekend was introduced at some point. It was relatively arbitrary. It was to do with stock markets. That's why it existed. And lots of roles have totally moved away from that. So I think there's some really exciting opportunity to increase the amount of leisure time that we have. And I also think that companies are incentivized to innovate now because talent is demanding flexibility. So there's so much incentive to innovate from a hiring perspective and from a talent perspective, because you, if you're a very flexible company offering, you know, free childcare or a 4-day week or the ability to work from anywhere for 3 months of the year or be hired from anywhere, then you are going to be able to have the pick of that talent, because people are starting to value that kind of creative flexibility more than they are, say, a $3,000 pay rise if they're moving from job to job, which is what progression and, you know, moving jobs used to be based on, was where can I be paid more? But now there's a plethora of other things that people can value, which is the whole kind of mantra behind Flexa, is having that amount of transparency, you know, companies leading, saying they offer free childcare or they offer a 4-day week, means that then you hire talent that is aligned with the way that you want to work. So it just makes sense for both parties to be totally transparent and open and put all their cards on the table as to whether a company is the right place for them and vice versa.
It's interesting though, isn't it? And I think you posted about this earlier this week. It's a hard thing to go in for a new job and say, I want to work these hours, or, you know, do you offer flexible work? Because there's still this sort of sense that if you're asking those kind of questions, you're not fully committed to the role. How do you sort of get around that? So people have kind of the power to ask for this stuff without sort of making themselves seem like they're more interested in time off than they are working.
There's a two-part question there, I think. First of all, yeah, there is still an enormous stigma attached to flexible working, sadly. And there is still this idea that, you know, if somebody's like, oh, can I have Wednesday afternoons off or whatever it is, then they're seen as less committed. Again, I think that's because we have a work culture globally, particularly in Western nations, that is incredibly focused on presenteeism, and your commitment is based by how long you sit at a desk. But I'm sure we've all worked with people that spend 4 hours a day on ASOS or watching the cricket rather than actually doing their job, but they are seen as hardworking because they're in the office first and they leave last. That's a cultural problem and a societal problem. And there are, I'm hoping that companies, you know, like comparing Deckers brands to Nike, those companies will start to illuminate the fact there is a better way to do it rather than just basing performance as a, on presenteeism. But then I think on, you know, on the other side of it, how do people ask for it? So I personally believe that it's very hard for the individual to ask, because naturally in a job hunting process, the individual, the job seeker, is the one with less power. I mean, it depends on the period of time that you're in terms of hiring. You know, when we all came late pandemic days, that it was a huge, it was a candidate's market. You could demand whatever you wanted, incredibly high salaries, massive salary increases at that time. Now we've gone into an employer's market because there's lots of people that got overdone. So that makes it very difficult for people to open up conversations about flexibility. So based on my own experience, I saw a better way of doing that. Whereas I don't think that it should be a black box and it says, this company is open to conversations about flexible working, because flexible working means something totally different from one person to another. So with Flexa, you can see that there is enhanced parental leave offered. You can see how long it is for. You can see what they want people in the office 2 days a week, or they're remote first with the expectation of coming into the office twice a month. It's totally transparent, and it means that then you can go into the interview process being educated and having your knowledge is power in those aspects, because you can ask, you can say, what made you want to go to a remote first model? What are the expectations there? You know, how do you measure performance in a remote first environment? It's much more empowering for the individual to go in with that knowledge, because then you're not coming at it going, God, is there idea of flexible working that I can work from home if I have a delivery and all the rest of the time I have to be in the office? So I personally think that, yeah, individuals need knowledge and information in order to open up those conversations to make it a more equitable and level playing field.
And of course, now this is written into legislation, isn't it? We've seen the government's flexible working bill become law. It feels to me as if it's a little bit out of date, I suppose, because of the pandemic and the fact that we're all having these conversations and lots of firms are already kind of biting the bullet and changing the way they do things. So what are your thoughts of on the legislation? Is it just kind of a bit late in the day for it, or do you think it is going to make a real impact on the UK workforce?
I actually don't think it's all it's cracked up to be at all. I think it's good that it's encouraged people to talk more about flexibility and it's opened up those conversations. But ultimately, top-down legislation and things like this don't work enormously well because, A, it creates an enormous admin and legal burden for those companies, so they're going to start to resent it. I wrote about it a couple of times over the last few years when it was obviously being debated and coming in, and I compared it to like trying to force a child to eat its broccoli. They're either going to feed it to the dog or end up hating broccoli for the rest of their life. And it kind of feels like that's a bit like this with flexible working in large corporations. And people often assume that I'm really anti-office. I'm very much not. I'm sitting in an office now. And if a company wants to bring people back into the office 5 days a week and is open about why they're doing that, and it's logical reasons, not saying it's stifling innovation, then go for it. You know, there are loads of those consequences that are going to happen. They're going to have to pay more. There's going to have to be more incentive to go into the office. But if they want to do that, absolutely fine. I personally don't think that we should be forcing every company to think about adopting flexible working, because it's not going to make the progress that we want to, especially as people have to wait until day one in order to ask for flexibility. So they'll have accepted that role. They'll have potentially made some massive life sacrifices in order to do that, moved, whatever it might be. And then it may or may not be rejected, and then they can try again twice in a year. I think what we need to be doing is creating more transparency so that the companies that offer flexibility win that war for talent. It's easy to hire people. Those companies start to perform better. They've got more diverse teams. And we start to see the positive effects of flexible working in evidence, proper data, proper performance data, proper diversity data, being able to link productivity to freedom, etc. Whereas we're kind of operating in a bit of a black box at the moment. And that's why all these RTO mandates are happening, because there's very little proof around either side. So I think it's a very interesting kind of conversation and question that's happening. But top-down legislation with this kind of stuff generally doesn't work brilliantly.
And you mentioned offices there. And of course, office space has become one of the big questions for employers now. Lots of these big corporates have huge office space that perhaps they're seeing being massively underused, particularly on certain days. We've seen people tending to come in the middle of the week and not so much on a Friday. And then startups are perhaps thinking, well, this is an expense we don't have to pay for. You know, if we don't have to have office space, we can save lots of money. So how do people kind of make their decisions about those big outlays on office space when they're not really sure what their working week is going to look like?
Yeah, I think a lot of the onerous lease stuff is all typical like sunk cost fallacy. Someone's like, well, I've spent millions on it, so I'm going to keep chasing wasting money, which I think is a natural precondition of humans, but it's not very logical at the moment. I think ultimately what happens when companies do a full RTO mandate, just because of the fact there's empty office space, is they start spending more money on hiring because those people leave. There's huge effects on attrition and productivity as well. So I think that's one of the very tricky things, is although it might feel like, oh, I'm wasting £10 million because I bought this office space for 10 years, you're adding more cost to that by forcing that to be used 5 days a week. I personally do think that there's a lot of very compelling evidence for large corporates on hybrid. But I think that the trouble is 3 days a week has become the sort of like set expectation, whereas actually there's still a lot of demand for hybrid, but it's more like 1 or 2 days a week because it's quite a nice balance. So I think large corporates are going to start bringing hybrid back, and then I hope it doesn't creep to 4 days and 5 days, etc. But it's a good way to use that office space is to do the 1 or 2 days in the week, because then you get the best of both worlds. Startups naturally start lean. I'm sitting in a shipping container, and even though we've outgrown it because there's only regularly 5 or 6 people in 1 day, we're not going to get another space. And I think that's how companies will start evolving and thinking about space, is we'll get enough space that the core team that come into the office can use it. And then as soon as when we have team days, we get a bigger space, we rent a space. And same with co-working. If there's people that are a bit further away and then they want to work in a space, then I think companies will start paying for co-working. I think we're going to have a much leaner approach to it, and also office sharing as well. Because if one company wants to be in on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and another one only does Thursdays, like, it's logical to split that place 50-50. There's a lot of different tech companies that are really innovating in that space as well, to try and make the use of offices a bit more innovative than just getting an enormous office in central London, paying 10 million for it, and then insisting that everyone uses it.
One of the main reasons, I guess, and you mentioned their team days, to come into the office, or at least to come together, even if it's not in an office, is for company culture, cohesion, as well as just kind of having those conversations and the serendipitous nature of being together and the sparking things that you didn't necessarily even know you needed in your company. How do particularly new companies deal with that? So say they've opted for a bit of office space, but maybe it's office sharing, or maybe it's, you know, quite small. They've opted to allow people a degree of flexibility, so they're only seeing people in a few days a week. They're not necessarily seeing everybody in on the same day. How do they maintain their company culture, which to a startup is really important, right?
Yeah, I think the company culture versus flexibility debate is really interesting, because I have seen so many brilliant examples of remote companies with great cultures. I think, again, I keep using the kind of word intentional. I think it has to be very intentionally curated. Like, I do think that there needs to be the opportunity to be able to meet your team in person, because I think, you know, written communication can come across quite differently to whereas when you know somebody and you've seen their facial expressions, you've seen their body language, it really helps to resolve conflicts and to overcome those, like, oh, did they mean that? It was a bit sharp kind of message. And I don't know any remote companies that don't meet at least once a year for some kind of offsite like that. Often the ones that meet once a year, it'll be for like a full week where some people kind of go on holiday together. We meet once a month, and it's just a team day where it's big kind of strategy and brainstorming sessions, team building activity, and then dinner. And we pay for people to come up once a month. Yeah, there are loads of different ways of doing it. But the in-person contact, I do think, is incredibly important, because remote and in-person work are complementary. They're not opposing. But the blend and the balance of in-person versus remote work, I think it's very much up to the company and what they see as important to their culture. But one thing I will say is that when companies blame remote work for their lack of culture or the deteriorating culture, it's normally pointing to a sign of something quite different, and that maybe their culture wasn't as strong as they thought it was, and that actually going into the office and feeling that buzz was making them think that their culture was significantly better. So I think it's really important to balance the two, but I don't think that the default of 5 days a week in the office means there is a stronger culture at all.
The thing that slightly concerns me about the idea of flexible working is I think back to my early days in journalism, and a lot of what I did was learnt from other people, and it was learnt by being with those people all day, every day, 5 days a week. We haven't quite got that now, have we? For youngsters starting off in the work market, they are not necessarily seeing and good practice on a daily basis. So what do we do about that issue?
Yeah, I think it's a really important part of the conversation of flexible working. And I would really heavily encourage anybody that is in the first 2 years of their career to be going into the office, you know, at least once a week. I don't think that you need to be with people 5 days a week in order to absorb that information, because naturally there's going to be times where you want to get your head down and focus, write, get through an Excel spreadsheet, whatever it might be. And people junior in their career will be doing a hell of a lot of that because they're often doing the grunt work. But it's really important to spend time with people, as you say, to absorb their knowledge, to also to understand, you know, what corporate life is as well, and like how people interact in offices is very different to social situations. And I do really value some of the time I spent in the office, but it definitely didn't need to be 5 days a week. So I think companies, again, need to really think through how they keep their talent, young talent, engaged, involved, learning, and listen to them as well, because a lot of them do like spending time in the office. Gen Z enjoy flexibility, but they're not necessarily saying, oh, I want to be remote all of the time. I think that's a little bit of misinformation that tends to go into the media of like, oh, Gen Z never want to go to an office. They don't want to do any work. They're lazy. No, they just want different things. It's important to think of flexibility at different points in different people's careers as well. And I think one of the most important things is if you are getting your junior teams in once a week, making sure that there are other people around at that time as well, because there's nothing more frustrating than going to an office and nobody's there.
Exactly. It feels that we are very much in a time of change. So we're coming towards the end. If you were to sort of sum up where you think this is all heading, is it going to be just that, you know, every company does what suits them and there will be no sort of standard working week anymore? Or will we sort of... I got the train yesterday for the first time in a long time, early in the morning, and it felt to me like literally everybody was back to normal, back commuting. So are we just going back to the old ways because we're creatures of habit?
I think it's very, to your point, like when you got on the train, it felt like everybody was going back. And there are a lot of people going back into the office. Like there's a Stanford professor, Nick Bloom, who does some really insightful studies on work from home research. And it's across both Europe and the US. And actually, the average for people that can go into the office is working from home somewhere. It's about 1.5 days a week on average. So that's not as high as you might assume that it is. And I think I've bought Nike up twice now, but I mean it more as the logo. So I think we were up like at this point of the tick, just post-pandemic, where a lot of people were home 3 days a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week. And I think we're reaching a bit of a nadir, because coming out of the pandemic, there's been this real adjustment period. And as I mentioned before, like large corporations are blaming their poor stock price performance on flexibility. So we're seeing this bit of an idea at the moment. I think there's a lot of pushback against it. And I think people are using the lack of evidence and the lack of data as a way to say, oh, it's not working. Whereas I think what we will see over the next 3 years is an uptick again. So I reckon where we'll probably settle out is a general working week. The average working week will be 3 days in the office and 2 days at home for the next few years. And then I think over time, we might get to the point where it's 2 and 3. And then on those fringes, we're still going to have startups operating remotely, because there's so much benefit from a cost saving and talent acquisition and diversity perspective. We'll still see some large corporates doing that as well, but they will have to have really set themselves up to succeed. And then I think there's going to be loads of fringe innovation as well around the 4 day week, the 4.5 day week, the 9 day fortnight, really creative benefits like work from anywhere schemes. I think childcare, you know, it's hugely in demand, particularly in the UK. Paternity leave, dog friendly offices, you know, some really exciting innovation on the fringes. But I think if we're talking about, you know, just the same as the 5 day in office and 2 day weekend evolved and became the norm, I think we're going to see 2 to 3 days in the office and then those 2 days on the side. And hopefully a bit of a reduction from your standard 40-hour week to probably about 37.
Well, that sounds quite encouraging. I like the idea of a dog office as well, although maybe I'm going to start campaigning for a cat office. I think that's probably a harder thing. I have a cat, not a dog. It's been fascinating, Molly, talking to you. Thank you so much for joining me. But that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of the UKTM podcast. Thanks to everyone who's listening. We will, of course, be back with another episode next week. But in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next time, goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by HSBC Innovation Banking, the power behind the UK's forward thinkers, future makers, and leap takers. They're helping to ignite the bold ideas that reshape our world. Go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb to find out how innovation needs different.